Welcome to a Neuroscience episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
That was mistimed.
Yeah, let's see. There we go. He's a little rusty, people. I am your host, Tim Dill Double G. And I'm joined by Dirt from PopCultureNetwork.com.
Yay! Woohoo!
And we also have, back from his special mission, Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
I want to let everyone know that you can go to theclicknation.com to find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow us on Twitter at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com.
Don't forget to hashtag us. Hashtag Comic Book Chronicles.
Indeed. And also make sure to... That's what else I was going to plug. Oh, yes, make sure to join the show live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned to theclicknation.com to see when the post goes up.
Yeah, you're a little late today.
Yeah. I had been on time the last, like, month, so I figured I could afford to be tardy. No guests this week, so it's just us three. Oh, and we're missing our other host, at Roddy Cat on Twitter. And follow his news Twitter account, at News Nerds Need. So, with that out the way, let's take a look at what comic book news came out this following week. So there was some more Captain America, the Winter Soldier TV spots, and apparently one of them might have contained spoilers for the movie. It's only a question of actually do we want to mention those spoilers or not, and I'm not going to.
Why not?
You can spoil it.
I didn't see it.
Oh, I guess I won't spoil it then if Tim won't spoil it.
It concerns what might happen to a cast member.
Which one?
So we'll let that marinate. The one of the non-Caucasian ones. Yep. Make you wonder. Next up we have, so of course we all know about Marvel's Netflix series that they plan to launch in 2015 with Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones, which will all lead into a Defenders series. Marvel also announced that the majority of the filming for those series will take place in New York City.
Yay!
Bring in economy and jobs and whatnot to New York area.
And some authenticity to boot.
Yes. And actually, I guess today they aired the press conference live for it. I haven't watched it, but I saw
a picture of Governor Cuomo and Quesada and I'm not sure who else was in the photo, but I definitely saw a photo of that floating around online today. So that's pretty good. And like I said, it definitely brings some authenticity to these shows, because there's nothing like seeing the actual streets of New York in the show. So
they're actually filming in the city of New York, New York City proper?
That's my understanding. I mean, there's sound stages all over the place in the city, but they're going to be using the streets as the backdrop.
They did a press conference with the governor, but not the mayor. So they're like, oh, you're going to film in the city. You want the mayor to come? Nah, I don't think so.
The mayor may have been in the picture, too. I don't know.
The governor can be there. That's okay. But do you want the mayor there? No.
I won't say anything because I'm not 100% sure that the mayor was there. But he may have been.
Yeah, they made him sit in back.
Hmm.
To the back with you.
A little late on that one.
But yeah. I wasn't sure if I wanted to laugh at that.
Or cry. All right.
Along with the Guardians of the Galaxy motion picture coming out later this year, Marvel Comics is trying to capitalize by featuring some of its stars in various series. One of them will be Rocket Raccoon getting his own ongoing series written and drawn by Scotty Young.
Good for Rocket.
Would you say Dirt?
Is it going to be like an all ages book?
The way he described it in the interview, at least one of the earliest one I saw this morning, was so like a little bit of like Looney Tunes with adventure. But I know the premise of the series is he's a wanted raccoon. I was going to say wanted man, but he's not a man. He's wanted for something, so I guess that's the premise of the book. This will be my first time actually reading a Scotty Young drawn comic. Because the only time I've ever seen him do stuff is just covers.
What did he work on before? With Sequential Art?
He was doing the Marvel Wizard of Oz books.
Oh, okay.
And they had like five or six different miniseries in that.
So I'm actually looking forward to this book. Something, as much as I'm a fan of Marvel continuity and stuff all connecting together, I do enjoy, you know, just books off by themselves doing their own thing. Let's see. Right. DC had some news. First up being the current creative team on Wonder Woman. What's the artist name? Chang?
Bernard Chang.
Bernard Chang. No, that's the... Isn't that a Green Lantern Corps artist? The artist and writer currently.
Cliff Chang, maybe?
Yeah, Cliff Chang.
There you go.
Is it Brian Azzarello?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, the writer. They're both going to be leaving Wonder Woman later this year, I think in the spring. And taking over will be the current Forever Evil artist, David Finch, with his wife doing the writing.
No kidding.
So it'll be a like every 3 months book?
Ah!
We'll have to wait and see.
I mean, I like his artwork, but it always seems like whenever he tries to do a regular monthly title, he gets like 3 or 4 issues out, and then they have to start finding subs because it takes so long.
I'm wondering if it's going to be like basically the Marvel method of let's launch this book with this creative team, and then like after the 3 or 4 issues, the artist leaves and someone else takes his place.
And they just don't say anything?
Because basically that's what he did on Justice League. He launched Justice League of America, and he was on for like 3 or 4 issues, and that was it.
Oh, well.
But then with his wife being the writer, I don't know how that'll work. Maybe that'll keep him on it longer. But one various news outlet.
Or get him out sooner.
One various news outlet was speculating that they're going to try to tie the Wonder Woman, you know, closer to how she's being, written in the Justice League comic and how she may be portrayed in the Superman Man of Steel sequel is going to be called.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot she's in that, yeah.
Yep. Which would make sense because the Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang book has kind of been off on its own, doing its own thing with the gods and whatnot. So that is that. Last bit of DC news is, so was it every fall, I think it's in September, to commemorate the new 52, DC likes to have a monthly special where last year it was the Annoying Villains Month books, which trying to read all those books made me got me so backlogged that I'm still haven't caught up on my monthly reading for all the companies. And then there was the zero issue books. So this year they're going to do 5 years later, where every DC Comics is going to jump ahead 5 years. And supposedly someone told me that these are possible futures. So like every one of them, that these futures may not happen. And I don't know if that's accurate or not.
I wish that was a sound effect.
If they were just moving them 5 years ahead, like every book is now 5 years in the future, and like that's the gimmick of the DC universe, is that it's just slightly in the future, and then that way they can always have some kind of funky technology or something, and they can always just be like, well, because it's a few years in the future, you never know, then I'd be okay with it. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine, we'll see where that goes. But when it's like, hey, we're going ahead for a month, and then we're going back to normal, then it becomes just one of those stupid like DC 1 million or any of those type things where it's always like, who cares?
That's what I said.
I went into a short rant earlier this evening about it. The whole thing is, when they launched the New 52, they were like, all the DC Universe and the heroes have been around for 5 years, and sticking to that 5 years got them in so much continuity trouble trying to... I mean, Robbins has Batman had in 5 years.
Right.
Superman died and came back to life in 5 years. Now they're once again sticking to this 5 years and trying to jump ahead. So basically, in comic book time, everyone knows comic book time and real world time aren't the same. So 5 years comic book time is like 20 years in our time.
If that.
So trying to jump ahead that much time in comic book time, like, Batman should be like, it should be like the Batman Beyond universe, basically, by that point.
They should have just said, Robin.
Yeah, they should have just said, we're jumping ahead to the future, you're slightly ahead into the future. Don't give it the specific time frame. Because who, I don't know.
Yep, that's about right.
And then and it's going to lead into a third weekly comic that they haven't revealed what that's going to be yet.
So. Yeah, although they basically said that, you know, they're dumping a lot of single ongoing series. You know, they were trying to stick to that whole 52, you have to have 52 titles because it's the new 52 and blah, blah, blah. And they dumped a bunch of those, and that they're like, okay, well, that's kind of why we're doing these weekly things. Instead of trying to grab random characters and do an ongoing series, they're going to do more of these weekly type series that focus on a particular character or a particular storyline instead of, you know, trying to go through the roster and be like, Booster Gold, he gets a series now, you know, or, you know, some random, you know, who's that in the background of Wonder Woman number 12? Okay, they get a series, you know. Instead of doing that, they're just going to be like, okay, let's use this as an opportunity to try to let people be creative and put together a little story.
If that's the case, I can get with that, if that's the case, because I'd like to see, like, four issue, aka a month's worth of like a Blue Beetle story arc, and then jump to insert another random character that doesn't have a book anymore. Jonah Hex, since All Star Western's getting canceled, and whatnot.
Or to even, you know, take some of the characters and do crossovers and do that as a four issue weekly series. I think, you know, when you do something like that and you make it a weekly, then it seems more special because it's not drawn out as long. Like the whole Forever Evil. Like at its core, Forever Evil is a good story, but it's just taken so long to get it out. I think once it's done, you know, you sit down with the trade and you read the story at one point, it's okay. But just the way that it just feels like it takes so long for that book to come out. It's been forever.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the last bit of news, Agent 70 had...
Oh, he's muted. He's not even paying attention. He's like watching hockey or something.
I'm trying to pull up the announcement because I do get emails from Reed Pop. I want to have that ready as well as the news stories that were put out on Monday that Reed Pop is putting out a new comic book convention called Special Edition NYC. It's going to be at the Jacob Javits Center, the convention center that already hosts New York Comic Con. And the inaugural Special Edition NYC is going to take place on June 14th and 15th at Javits Center North. That is, I want to say it's a Saturday and a Sunday, so it's a two-day show. Tickets right now are for kids, $5, Saturday and Sunday, $30 each. The VIP tickets are already sold out.
And the whole point of this is that it's just comics. Like, it's not
correct
actors
correct.
From Firefly and
correct.
The Fonz and
correct.
Iron Sheik. Like, this will just be straight comic book stuff.
Right. And that is it's a nice spotlight to have on comics, because New York Comic Con really has grown into maybe not nearly as big as San Diego, but something comparable. And maybe, you know, this is just a shout out to the people who really just want to see the creators and, you know, meet them and you know, get signatures from them and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. They just posted a spotlight creator, Tony Daniel, who does Action Comics. There's already a host of names that we would be all familiar with.
Such as Man, Wonder Woman.
Oh, well, no, but they have Action Comics under his name. I'm actually looking at the Special Edition NYC page. They're probably slow on the update. Brian Wood, Charles Soule, David Peterson of Mouse Guard, Greg Pak, Frank Cho, someone who I know Tim Dog is going to be excited to hear, Ryan Stegman.
Yes, I was waiting for you to say his name. Say his name!
I jumped all the way down to that because I figured if I do go, I'm going to have to get something for Tim Dog from Ryan Stegman.
Actually, get something from him and Greg Pak for me.
Greg Pak and I are old buddies by now. I see him at most of these shows.
Yeah, I like him.
He's like, oh, great, there's that stalker.
Yeah, seriously.
So I wonder, I'm pretty sure it's going to be a big crowd for that. I'll be interested to see what the turnout is.
Sure. I'm surprised it's not already sold out the way New York Comic Con sold out so fast.
Had they even put the tickets available for that yet, though?
For New York?
No, this.
Yeah, it's already. I mentioned it in the introduction. The VIP tickets are already sold out.
That's VIP tickets.
Yeah, the VIP tickets were. Let me tell you what the offer was. It's a weekend ticket and more. So it's like for both days, and you get the VIP package is. Give me a second. You get a badge, exclusive artwork, early access. You get a T-shirt. No, you get a poster signed by the artist that does the actual poster. They haven't posted that yet. And a variant comic book. It's already sold out. It was $100 for 2 days.
Nice. And some non-comic book news. The WWE NXT Network launched this week. One of our hosts is a subscriber.
Yeah, and what?
What do you think?
So far, the network's okay. There are, you know, obviously some hiccups. It's brand new. It's been hammered. You know, there's no official word on how many people signed up, but at least 500,000, maybe 750,000 people signed up for at least the free week. And we'll see how many of them stick around and how many more they gain towards WrestleMania. But the way they have it set up is they basically have two different services running at the same time. And the first service is kind of like Netflix of WWE material. You can go in and watch old pay-per-views. You can go in and watch selected episodes of like ECW, Hardcore TV, or world-class championship wrestling, or, you know, recaps of Raw and SmackDown and that kind of stuff. But then they also have a second, like, part of the service, which is basically like a live TV channel. So when you turn on that feed, you basically get a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week streaming feed where they'll play like a match from an old pay-per-view, and then they'll go into like an interview with somebody, and then there'll be a 5-minute promo from, you know, one of the wrestlers, like responding to tweets and emails, and then they'll do like a documentary where Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart are sitting down talking about the Montreal Screwjob and everything. And like a lot of the stuff is from the old DVD library, you know, stuff that they released on home video, you know, over the years, and they've kind of selected certain parts of it out and repackaged it into a half hour show or a 1-hour special or something like that. But then they have a lot of new stuff just kind of slipped in between with new interviews and some backstage stuff and all of that kind of stuff. So my interest is really in the old stuff. So I've watched some of the live feed and just kind of watch the channel like a traditional network. But then the thing that I really like is going in and watching the old shows, the old pay-per-views. You know, I was watching Starrcade 91, you know, just going through watching old WCW and things like that. There are some hiccups. Like, they say it's available on Roku, but it's only available on certain Roku boxes. And of course, not the Roku box I have. You know, you'd have to have a newer model Roku to make it work, but it works on my PlayStation 3, no problem. It works on my Xbox 360. It works on my tablet. I've got a Kindle Fire. It's working on no problem. It's working on my other tablets, no problem. The one issue you kind of have is if you pull up like an old pay-per-view and you want to like fast forward through it, you go about halfway through or whatever, and then it kind of gets stuck in that loading where it says loading forever, and then it just drops the signal and you got to try it again. And that happens sometimes on Netflix and things like that too. So, but so far it's pretty slick. It runs pretty well. You have the ability, like when a show is playing, if you turn on the network and you're like 5-10 minutes late and you turn on that live channel, it asks you if you want to start at the beginning of the show instead of just picking up, you know, 5-10 minutes in, whatever. So that's kind of nice. And it's kind of one of those things where it kind of feels like there's a TiVo built in, you know, even though it's their streaming service. So for $9.99 a month, it actually seems like a pretty good deal. I mean, that's like $2.50 a week. That's less than your average comic book a week to get it. And even if you're only interested in the old stuff, there's a lot of old stuff on there right now. So far I'd say I'm pretty happy with it.
Cool. And of course, while we're recording, they're airing, I guess, their first pay-per-view on the network, the NXT Arrival. And I was seeing a bunch of complaining tweets that people's feeds froze before the main event started.
Oh. So yeah, it's all like backboned by the same people that do the MLB network. And I've heard a lot of people say that on the MLB network, like on the first, you know, week of the baseball season, they have a lot of these issues because everyone's going in and everyone's trying to watch everything on the MLB streaming service. So they figure a lot of this stuff is going to happen right now. And that's part of the reason why they did it now, several weeks before WrestleMania, because then they can kind of like, okay, well, now we know.
Yeah.
Well, like we have an idea. This is how many people we have, and we're having problems. So now we can throw more infrastructure in and try to, you know, pad it up a little bit more and do some of these specials to try to test and you know, break the network to see what it takes to keep it going.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up because, yeah, this is their sort of, you know, test drive of the network before WrestleMania. So
yeah, this don't is be the too free discouraged. Week. Yeah, so if anyone wants to go in and sign up now, it's free through, I think, Sunday night. So you basically sign up, and then you just have to cancel on Sunday night if you don't want to keep it.
So I need to sign up tomorrow.
Yep.
All right, that's news. Let's get into some reviews. Let's start with the end of the Ultimate Cataclysm, Ultimate's Last Stand, number 5.
Oh, I need to pull up the cover.
Yes, you do.
Forget about that. I forget I have a job.
But while he gets that ready, so the Ultimate Universe has been invaded by Galactus from the 616 universe, and he's hungry. He must feed.
He's hungry. I'm hungry.
I don't think that's his voice. I mean, that could be his voice, but I really don't think that's the voice of Galactus.
So I would have figured Dirt would have read this.
I did read it.
Oh, you just didn't put it on your list. Cool.
Oh, I didn't? Yeah, I did. I wrote Cataclysm 5. I didn't type out the whole long title.
So, as we know, the Ultimate Universe didn't end. And they defeated Galactus. Even though that was a question mark for me in my review on declicknation.com. Speaking of which, I like that Paul Cornell, the writer of Wolverine, actually responded to my tweet when I tweeted up my review leak. We'll get to that later, though, because I actually don't agree with what he said. You don't know if he was joking or not.
Should we spoil how they beat Galactus? Does it matter?
I don't think it matters, since everyone knows the universe is going on anyway.
Okay, so they basically open a portal to the negative zone. And they go to shove Galactus in, and of course Thor comes up to, basically push him through and have that last big punch, and Thor gets sucked in with Galactus, and the door shuts. So they're basically able to get rid of Galactus, but they basically have to send Thor through with him in order to get rid of him. So Thor and Galactus are just kind of floating in this darkness of the negative zone. Forever.
Where a nihilist is. I love it.
Although, is the ultimate negative zone
the same negative zone?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
It has to be.
Yeah, then, it doesn't have to be.
Could someone in the regular 616 universe go, oh, we need to open that portal to the negative zone to go back to that hidden thing we have there, and suddenly there's Galactus staring at him?
I'm pretty sure that's probably what's going to happen.
Although if Ultimate Thor comes out in the regular 616 universe, how much do you think regular Thor is going to like him?
Very little.
I like that. I like how they use Kitty Pryde. That, you know, it made sense. Her power set, you know, disrupts.
To the machines. Yeah,
destroys machine.
So that's why I said, even though they say, you know, dead means dead in Ultimate Universe, we don't. Really, no, we don't know if Thor is dead. Same with Captain America. I don't care if they just pick up a shield at the end of the comic versus body.
I think the only thing you could say with Captain America is maybe he wasn't dead, and, you know, some writer's going to have him, like, laying in a hospital in a coma for a couple of years, and maybe he'll snap out of it. But Thor is obviously not dead. He's just in the negative zone. I think it would take more than a trip through the negative zone to kill Thor.
Absolutely.
They didn't want to have a dead body laying on a comic book cover, I suppose.
My
inside the book.
Yeah, my big issue with the series, though, is that, I mean, of course they teased the world was going to end, and you thought they were going to cancel the Ultimate Universe, because that's kind of what it looked like, and... you know, a lot of people said that it's just not selling as well as it used to, so it kind of made sense that they would cancel it, and on and on and on. And then you find out halfway through the series that they're not canceling it, and in fact it's going to continue, and there are new books coming out. And so they wrap up this story with just basically Galactus and Thor go through this hole, the hole closes, and everyone goes, phew, we made it. And it's like the end. Like, there's no wrap-up. You don't have, like... you know, four pages at the end of, like, you know, 6 months later or a month later, or the cleanup or the funeral for Captain America or anything like that. It's just kind of like, okay, that's done.
Well, it's sort of like a typical Bendis event where it ends, but it leads to the next story. There's no, like, official ending, because after this end, we have the one-shot survive where you actually get the funeral of Captain America and all the heroes. Reflecting and reacting to what just happened to him, leading into the all new Ultimate Universe.
The all new Ultimate Marvel now.
Yes.
And I saw that Ultimate Fantastic Four is coming back.
Mm. Ultimate FF.
Yeah. So you're going to have
It's not Fantastic Four. It's the FF. So it's almost like Ultimate Future Foundation.
Yeah, Ultimate FF and the Ultimates. The Ultimate Ultimates? Or I'm not sure how they're doing that. But
are they called the All-New Ultimates, I think? I think that's what they're called.
The All-New Ultimates now? I don't know.
I love it.
But it's just one of those things where I liked the story more than I disliked it, but I got to the end and I still felt kind of let down that like that was it. Mm. It's like when you're watching a movie and you know it's like something happens and it's like they shoot the bad guy and everyone goes whew, and then the credits roll and you're like, wait, that's it? I mean, that's kind of what this felt like we're at the credits already. Like this, it just felt like there should have been more of a wrap up at the end of this series. And I know they're doing a one shot to kind of tie that up, but I mean, that one shot is not part of this series. So this series should have handled a lot more of that. So.
Dirt wanted resolution.
I did.
This is comics though.
So, well, it's comics. That means you can go back and change it later.
True enough.
That's what that means.
So which all new ultimate book are you looking forward to the most?
Well, I don't know. Is Ultimate Spider-Man continuing or is it ending when he joins?
Miles Morales, the Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, is that what they're calling it? Okay. Yes. Well, it'll be that one then.
It's only three books. The FF book is replacing the X-Men book on the line in the publishing line.
Yeah.
So once again, the mutants get shafted, just like in the. I kid.
Good riddance. I get the Ultimate books now. I'll keep getting them. You know, I mean, it's only three, so I'll still read them until they do something incredibly stupid that pisses me off, and then I'll drop them. But for now, I'm okay.
Yep. Okay. Anyone else want to throw the next book out to talk about?
Let's see. Well, I'll throw out one, something that I talked about when the first issue came out, saying what's up to Alyssa Milano out there. Shout out to Alyssa Milano, who's the boss. Hacktivist number two. And I'm sad to say that I was kind of disappointed in the sophomore effort in the second issue, because I don't think it had the same energy that the first issue had. And it seemed to, you know, there were definitely a few interesting plot twists, especially with this, you know, just very quickly, this group of kind of secret do-gooder hackers who run a social networking site basically become enlisted and join forces with the U.S. government to kind of hack their way into social and political change. But it all goes terribly wrong in this issue. There's definitely a good level of intrigue. I would recommend this book to someone who is looking for something a little deeper than the usual superhero fare. I think you have to have read the first issue in order to understand this issue, which is always a downer. But at the same time, I believe it's a four-issue series, so it would make sense that you would have had to read the first issue to understand this one. The art was very good, definitely well above average. I just think that the energy that was in the first issue just was not there this issue. I think this is much more story-based, and it wasn't nearly as fun as the first issue. But I'm interested to see where the third issue goes. Go ahead.
Well, do you think that's because it's a four-issue series that you have your book one is establishing, your book two kind of gives more tone and background, and then in book three you have some sort of confrontation and how will they ever get out of this? And then book three resolves everything.
Right. Towards the end of book two, you start to get the beginnings of book three that the confrontation part of that arc. So you start to see it happening. So, you know, like I said, it's not surprising that we're getting to that point now, but at the same time, you know, I kind of missed that. You know, the reason why I enjoyed the first issue so much was that there definitely was a good energy to it.
So I just tweeted at Miss Milano that we were reviewing her.
All right.
Number two.
Nice. Right now. Nice.
Also, put Agent 70's personal phone number in that also, just in case she wants to get a hold of him for whatever.
That's right. Holla.
All right. Awesome. Let's see. Let me pick a book. A book that I remember Dirt enjoying the first issue when it first came out. Deadly Class number 2. Oh. So, this issue...
What? You mean it's not My Little Pony?
Put that down right now. So with the issue number 2, we pick up with Marcus, the lead character, his first day at the School of Assassins. He sort of gets... He meets the... I'm not sure. I forget who the character is. Like the dean, I guess, over the school. Sort of gets to run down and... You go through each of his classes. Like, I think one of them was beheading. Like period number 2 was like beheading. Class number 1 was the psychology of assassinating or assassinations. One was how to make like poison serums was another class, and then like all the different cliques in the school. And it basically was sort of like mirroring how. You can go to like a regular high school or a high school where everyone is training to be an assassin. You know, everything's still the same. People will pick on you because you're the new kid, or you know, think certain things of you.
Do they have a prom in the Deadly Class?
Hopefully, they do. Maybe that's like issue 10.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, there's just the first day for him. But I guess Remender has put out issue 3 preview early, so I need to check that out.
Yeah, actually, they sent that to us this week. So,
and he even mentioned it like in the last page of the book where he sort of spends a page talking about the book and the reception. I will also need to mention the artist Wesley Craig.
Yep.
I enjoyed his art a lot more in the second issue than I did the first. The first issue he took more risk as far as like the layouts of the panels, which I actually enjoyed. But this, he did that a couple times this issue, but not as much as in the first. But it was sort of the more of a traditional style comic as far as the layouts. But it seemed like I can't remember if he did the inking and art and colors himself or someone else did the colors, but it seemed like everything is a little more tighter this time around. But yes, that's Deadly Class number 2.
Cool.
Pick one, Dirt.
Okay. I'm going to jump over to Star Trek. Why not? Star Trek 30. One of the things that I really love about this comic series is that it's being overseen by the executive producer of the movies. So all the stories, they keep saying that these stories count, like these are real.
Nice.
You know, because obviously the movies
in canon. Come
out. Yeah, they're canon. The movies can only come out so often, so they use this to kind of, you know, fill the time in between. And in the last issue, you saw a Star Trek universe where all the male characters have become female and all the female characters have become male. And they find this like anomaly in space. And of course, you know, they're there to explore. So they go to check it out and they get pulled into it. And the Enterprise comes head to head with the Enterprise, which is of course the one from the movies with Christopher Pike and everybody else with the regular characters. And so you have the male versions and the female versions basically staring off at each other when the last issue ended. So in this one, they actually, you know, come together. They, you know, send a team to the other ship and they're, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and why they're there. And what they realize is they're in some sort of nexus of all the realities. And so suddenly this, you know, whatever this anomaly is, it starts to collapse. And as it collapses, other time streams, other parallel universes start to like merge with it. So at one point you've got Kirk from the Mirror Mirror original episode appears to attack them. At one point you've got Klingons in Starfleet uniforms basically yelling at them, why are you on our ship, and attacking them. At one point Geordi LaForge from Next Generation appears on the ship, like trying to figure out what the heck's going on. So it really was it's one of those for the fan type stories. Like, this is a fan service type of book where they're kind of doing that, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hope you're all enjoying the ride and having a good time. But at the same time, I thought they did a really good job with the way the relationships between, you know, when you see a parallel version of yourself, you know, it's like you see your double. And we've seen that happen so many times where Kirk meets evil Kirk or Spock meets evil Spock and, you know, that kind of stuff. But then when they actually, like, they're looking at each other like, okay, well, we're the same person. We have the same, you know, basically the same background. We have the same feelings about stuff, but society treats us differently because of being male or female, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It was just a neat way to explore a way of doing the parallel universe type stuff, which you really can't do on regular TV. I mean, like, I don't think they're going to do an episode of the movie where they have everybody in drag, you know? So it was an interesting way of adding something different to that idea of the parallel universes. And at the same time, you know, paying homage to all these different characters and all the, you know, Star Trek that came before. So I really enjoyed it.
Star Trek.
So there you go.
Cool.
All right, let me see what is the one I want to pick. Uncanny Avengers number 17.
Interesting. I did read that, so we can. So that's okay. We can. Did you read it, Doug?
No, I haven't read Uncanny Avengers in a long time.
All right. It's so a big reminder. We can at least talk about this. Yeah.
I just now noticed that a lot of reminder books. So. Kind of spoiler. Try to say if I want to spoil or not. Yes, give it a little spoiler read. Yeah.
There's a lot to spoil in this book, too.
So, surprise, the Earth's gone.
Yep. I'm like, wait, so when do the other books take place?
This right? thing's been out of continuity with everything else anyway. Right. Don't worry about continuity. Just enjoy this book for its awesomeness. So we finally have the Apocalypse Twins, or Twin, because I guess the other one got killed by Thor last issue. You know, I kind of forgot that. Eamon, the sister, is the surviving twin, and they are the Celestial is about to try to destroy the Earth in retribution for the Apocalypse Twins killing the Celestial back probably like 8 issues ago,
right,
or whenever it happened. And the heroes of Earth and Dr. Doom, for some reason, decide to, you know, try to stop it. You know, I still say that was a Doom bot. I don't know if I can't see Doom working with the heroes like that. But anyway, they fail. The Celestial blows up the Earth, but the mutants were raptured onto the Apocalypse Twins arc, I suppose. So now we get our Planet X storyline, which will take place next. And actually, they said that's like the fake name of it. It's actually called, like, I forget what the official title of the next arc is called. Remember, said they called it Planet X so they could, like, hide the, so they wouldn't spoil the ending to this arc, the Ragnarok now. So the only surviving members of this, Unity team of Avengers are Wasp, Havoc, Thor, Wolverine, and Sunfire, I guess. Yeah, because he should have got raptured. I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, what just trying think? To wonder. When I was reading this, like I said, I was just trying to wonder when this is happening. Why, you know, like, when did all this happen? And, you know, and spoiler alert, Cap gets gutted like a fish. I was very disappointed by that, but, you know, what can you do? You know, we'll see where this goes. There's definitely some juice in this book after how many issues was it of just kind of slow burn?
It's been a couple.
And now, you know, the last few issues have definitely racked, you know, like they ramped up the excitement level. So I'm kind of curious to see where this goes from here now that, you know, the Earth is, you know, gone supposedly.
I like that the villain won, even though we know this isn't going to last,
right?
Because of all this time jumping and alternate, the Kane's Kronos core going to get involved and whatnot.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be, you know, anytime there's a, you know, Kang is involved, especially in more recent times, there's going to be some time traveling business, you know, with things making, you know, things changing on the fly. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
How about I pick a book? Did anyone here read Aquaman number 28?
Not yet.
Dirt?
Yes, actually, I did.
I enjoyed this book immensely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually just thinking about this book a moment ago as I was flipping through stuff. I'm trying to find the cover here. I haven't read Aquaman regularly since really the debut in the New 52. Like, I read the first arc and then I just kind of let it fall to the side, and I figured I'd get back to it eventually. But with all the shakeups going on the last few issues, I kind of got back into it. And
right.
I sat down to read this one, and this was kind of what I really wanted for a long time, because it dealt with his personal life.
Right.
In a really fun and amusing way.
Sure.
Plus it has the beginnings of a huge conflict brewing.
Right.
In the ocean.
Right.
Plus there's some sort of mystery with a side character and something else that happens on the last page of the book. That's one of those
right.
dun 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 for next month. And I was like, this is really good.
Yes. Yes.
Like I
give this book a lot of credit. I definitely think Paul Pelletier's art sells this book for me,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I thought the story, like you said, did a lot to sell and develop the character to me. You know, as a guess, yes, Aquaman talks to the fishes, but you know, this particular issue, I think, sold the character to me a lot more than any of the other ones. Even though the art has been consistently good, I think this issue sold the Aquaman character to me way more than even Johns's run on this book.
Well, I like the fact. He goes to his high school reunion.
I didn't want to spoil everything, but.
Well, yeah, I'll say that.
Okay.
He goes to his high school reunion.
Yeah, but who knows what year that was, because it's, you know, what happened 5 years ago? For God's sake, when did he graduate?
Well, it doesn't say. It doesn't say. But the point is, he goes to the reunion, and you know, this is only like maybe 7 or 8 pages of the overall story, so it's not like it's the whole book.
Right.
But it does.
There's definitely other arcs, you know, other stories developing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's a lot really going on in this
yes.
book when you break it down. But it, when he goes to his high school reunion, you have the stories of flashbacks to what it was like for him as a kid, and what it was like growing up, and what it was like discovering his powers. At the same time, giving you this overview of the city where he lives, because, you know, everybody from his high school, it's a small town,
right.
you know, nobody really moved away. So you still get this sense of where he lives and what it's currently like in that town. And it makes
right.
you feel like, even though these are, you know, mostly characters that you may never see again, there are still a few that he interacts with in such an interesting way that it feels like this is a living town. Like, this does feel alive. Like, he's in a real world. And I like when they can do something that's in the current time period. Like, it's not just all flashbacks, but the way he's interacting with them and the story of kind of like, well, what's the deal with that guy? And, you know, he has to kind of tell the story, gives you those moments from his past I just really enjoyed that. And this is one of those, like, this is one of those books where I quickly read it because we were going to be doing the show tonight, but probably what I'll do is I'll sit down sometime in the next couple of weeks with maybe the last two issues that lead up to this and just sit down and read them all together in a row. Like, I just really enjoyed this a lot.
I've been reading this book for the last couple of months. Like I said, you know, the Pelletier art really draws me in. You know, it's so sharp and well done. But as you said, the flashbacks being told as reminiscing, you know, as reminisces at the high school reunion was really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And,
and the way – I think it also helps in the way that a lot of the ways that the people treat him, like they're coming up to him and asking, well, do you remember like one time we were out at sea and our boat was going to crash and, you know, you came and you dragged us to safety?
No. Something happened. Was that you? That's what it was. Yeah.
And the way you see how people perceive him as a character.
Right.
Because the way that they look at him as a character.
Well, they knew him before he was a king. So, you know, that sort of, you know, informs their perspective, you know.
And he's kind of blown away by they're almost treating him the same way as they would treat Superman, in the sense of like, hey, you saved my life, or hey, you saved my cousin, or, you know, whatever, that kind of stuff. And for him, it's, you know, that whole, he's a hero without thinking he's a hero. You know, he just goes out and does what needs to be done. So I think that really also helped the character, because he really does come across as likable, but also as very powerful. And the way he needs to be, you know, someone that you actually pay attention to. So,
I definitely give this issue a lot of high marks.
Yeah, this is really good.
I've been reading Aquaman probably for good. I guess earlier last year I started reading it, so I've been, you know, I have a good run going. And I wasn't crazy so far with what Jeff Parker was doing on the last two issues previous to this one, and plus Paul, Pelletier was had someone else helping him on art, so it was jumping back and forth with art, and I wasn't crazy about that, but I see he drew the entire issue, so, and it sounds like it was a fun issue if it had the much heralded class reunion in it, so I will be reading it this week.
It was fun. I definitely recommend it. It's definitely up there for a click of the week for me.
Yeah, well, and especially the part at the high school reunion. Like, what came to my mind is when you watch, like, an episode of Psych where it's funny, but it's not, like, laugh-out-loud funny. Mm. It's just – it's funny, like, endearing and enjoyable. And that's how this came across. Like, you're not going to be, like, slapping your leg, as you're reading this book. But, I mean, you're definitely amused by it and endeared to it.
I was about to say, I think it definitely holds special meaning. Granted, you know, the target audience for comics now skews a lot older than it used to. So there's probably more than just me reading this who's already, you know, in the audience who already gone to a high school reunion or four. So, so, you know, there were definitely a few jokes in there, a few bits and moments that struck a little bit close to home. But, you know, I definitely appreciate it. And, you know, like I said, very enjoyable issue, very humanizing issue. And very, you know, this was a real character developing issue for Aquaman, more so than I think I've ever read an Aquaman book to be, you know, like,
yeah, really not never since- read. Not since the first issue, really.
Right. You know, and like I said, give him a lot of credit. I give Parker a lot of credit for taking it in this direction.
Well, agreed.
Nice. Yeah, you guys got me excited to read Aquaman again.
Cool.
Our job here is done. Thanks for watching, everybody.
Hey, you know me. I'm the Marvel guy through and through. But if... honestly, of the DC books, I think Aquaman and Batman are probably the strongest ones.
Yeah, I've kind of been thinking about – it's not like I read a lot of DC books anyway, but I was trying to decide if I need to kind of streamline things. And Aquaman hopefully will stay on the list. What about a book that I know – or a family of book that – Agent 70 has enjoyed in the past. What about Fantastic Four number 1?
I did read this. I didn't put it on my list, but I did read this. How about you guys?
I read it.
Alrighty. So what'd you think?
It was fine. It set up, it introduced you to the family. You got to see each character's personalities. You got the sort of the glimpse of the what's to come in the future as far as how James Robinson is trying to deconstruct the team and put them in bad situations.
They're putting them in a really bad situation.
And I like the red outfits.
The red and black?
Yeah, the red and black. They're like the Wolf Pack. In the Wolf Pack.
Hey, that's a reference I can get. Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't even think of that. That's funny.
You know, I wanted to read this. I just haven't had the time yet.
All right. I was about to say, I won't spoil too much then because...
there really ain't anything to spoil. They ain't really doing anything.
You know what's funny is that it's hard to, you know, like with the, you know, with what happens at the end of the issue and what those, the beings that appear, it's hard to tell, you know, like they sort of, they're reminiscent of certain beings, but they're not. And you're just trying to figure out if it is what you think it might be. So
I guess I'm not familiar with the FF, so I had no clue who that those things were.
Right. But there's definitely like kind of a hint of what those things might be. But you know, listen, it gets you to read number two, right? See what happens. You know what? I was okay with the art on this. Who is this? Leonard Kirk. I was okay with the art. I wasn't enthusiastic about it. I was just okay with it. I'm willing to give this another shot.
I'm glad you brought up his art. I enjoyed his art a lot on this. He seems like the perfect Fantastic Four artist because after he did the Hunger miniseries in the Ultimate Universe, it was kind of cosmic. And I don't know. His art style seems to fit a Fantastic Four book since they're more, you know, adventure and exploring.
Right. I thought it was okay. I thought it was good. It's just not, you know, like I'll have to see how the second issue strikes me.
Oh, and I guess it makes sense because I believe he did the art on a Star Trek book.
Right.
Or somebody. Someone. I forget who the artist or the writer was, but I remember hearing he did art on Star Trek.
Huh. No, cool. I think you're right. I think I did see that. It might have been in the liner notes in the back.
I saw it in a couple of interviews, you know, sort of promoting the book.
Right. Like they worked together, Robinson and Kirk.
It was the editor, Mark Panacea.
Right.
He was the editor on the Star Trek book.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. According to the Memory Alpha Wiki, which is the Star Trek thing, he worked on the Deep Space Nine series for Malibu, which was bought by Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like he did 22 issues of the Malibu Deep Space Nine.
I miss Deep Space Nine, the show.
Yeah, I know. I love that show. But anyway, so he's done space. He's done cosmic. So it makes sense that he would do... He would do the Hunger series and then do Fantastic Four, yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, I'm willing to give it a shot. Go into number two, see how it goes.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said I'll try to stick around through the opening arc and we'll see. That I wonder which one of his books I'll enjoy the most. This for All New Invaders. It's going to be – not really enjoying All New Invaders, so maybe Fantastic Four can pull ahead.
Oh, that reminds me of a piece of news. Dang it. You mentioned All New Invaders. I wanted to throw this out real quick. All New Invaders, let's see.
It's canceled.
No. There's an upcoming issue of Superior Spider-Man 30 and Avengers 27. They are going in Superior Spider-Man 30, I believe it is. They are reprinting She-Hulk number one in the back of the book. And in the back of Avengers 27, I believe they're going to reprint All New Invaders number one. And it's going to be the same cover price, but they are reprinting the entire issue in the back of those books because those are two of the top-selling titles And they're reprinting these two new series that have not caught on like they thought they were. They didn't sell as well. So they are reprinting them in those without charging any extra to the people who buy those books in the hopes that those people will then jump onto those series.
I like the new She-Hulk.
How do they, I guess, well, the Diamond, of course, it'll be a while for the Diamond numbers come out for, I guess, February. Did She-Hulk launch in February or January?
It was this month, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
I mean, they'll know, they know internally, you know, because, I mean, they know what they printed. And then they always overprint to a certain degree, you know, hoping that there will be reorders. You know, people, oh, I missed that number one. Can you order it for me? And, you know, that kind
of thing. So basically, yeah, you didn't hear a bunch, you know, you heard second printings for Black Widow, number one, and Punisher, and...
Oh no! Wait, maybe it was Black. Maybe it was Black Widow one and not She-Hulk one.
I think it might have been She-Hulk. I think I might have read the same.
See, this is why you're supposed to pull up the news stories before you actually go on the air. It may have been Black Widow one.
God forbid. Heaven forbid.
Actually, it might have been Black Widow. Now you think you talk.
That's strange because Black Widow, I like that. You know, like I thought that was well done. And I think the first two or three issues have been.
When the second print in.
Yeah, it's got to be Black Widow 1 and Invaders number 1 are the two that are being reprinted.
I can understand all new Invaders number 1 because that's a tough sell
and that,
so soon after Infinity, you know?
And are they putting,
like jumping right back into that with this kind of World War II group?
Is the all new Invaders going to be included in the Avengers?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense cuz Cap's in it and whatnot.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so anyway.
All right.
We want to list some more books, or we're going to give clicks of the week.
Wait, I want to talk about.
That's one more I'll pick out too.
Oh man, where did it go? Oh, here it is. All right, you know the RoboCop series. A couple weeks ago, I talked about one of the issues that I really enjoyed, and the last two were not as good as that first one, but this latest issue was really, really good again. This is called Beta. RoboCop Beta, and this is the fourth one of the four. So the first one and the fourth one, I really enjoyed. The two in the middle were just kind of there. But what happens in this story is this takes place before the movie and before the RoboCop that we know, when they're kind of testing out the technology.
Right.
They go into basically the battlefield and overseas in, you know, Afghanistan or wherever, and a soldier, you know, basically gets killed, and they take his body and they put him into this RoboCop program that they're developing, and they make him as basically their first test run. And they're going to use him in the war scenario to see how he reacts and how well he does to see if it's maybe something that they can do back home. So this is really the story of them developing that technology. And needless to say, things don't go exactly as planned, which is why there's a cover up at the end and you don't see this guy anymore. But it's one of those where one of the things that they touched on in RoboCop 2, the original Frank Miller story, is this idea that they tried to develop other RoboCops after the first one, and they always failed for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, they kind of trimmed it down to like this little, you know, 2-minute video montage that was just, you know, supposed to be kind of funny and whatever. But this really touches on that idea in a much more serious manner, and deals with this idea of, you know, the ideas of RoboCop are simple. You know, like, what is life? And, you know, at what point is he a product? And what point is he a person? And everything like that. But this kind of deals with the motivations of, you know, you have to have the right person in the suit in order to make it work. And when you take the wrong person and you put him into this type of situation, it's not going to work out for the best. And that's what this story is dealing with. So I thought it was, a really well done look at the failure of the technology and the reasons why, you know, when you look ahead to these things, you know, the guys at Google just put out a book like this last week, talking about the future technology they're building towards and how computers are going to be thinking for themselves by 2030 and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And, you know, this is kind of dealing with that idea of like, you know, how do you really wrangle this technology and the, you know, where's the moral code that you deal with on these types of issues when none of this stuff has ever been done before. So I thought it was really well done. It was very interesting and I really enjoyed it a lot.
Did you see the movie, the latest reboot?
I have not seen the whole thing. I have a screener.
Fancy.
And I've only been able to watch about half of it because I can't watch it when the kids are awake.
Right.
You know? So, and I've had stuff going on like this whole last week with my roof collapsing and everything like that.
What?
So, yeah, we had.
What? We'll talk about it off air.
Yeah.
What?
So anyway, of what I've seen of the movie, I really enjoyed, but I haven't seen the whole thing yet.
Okay.
I was going to say, this isn't the same RoboCop series where we got the creators to retweet it and share it.
Yeah, well, it's different creative teams on each issue.
Oh, okay.
So those guys only did that first issue.
Ah, gotcha.
Gotcha. All right, all right.
I can't remember how they found it in the first place.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, anyway.
You want to throw a book out to him? Because I got one last one.
Yeah, I got. Yeah, my last one is going to be Batman Superman number 8.
Oh, I think I did read that. Greg Pak, right?
Yes, Dirt and I were discussing it. We're discussing it before the show started.
Oh, so I think all three of us read it. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
So this is the first contact crossover between Batman, Superman, and World's Finest. And apparently something's going on with Power Girl. Her powers are going crazy. And Huntress decides to contact Batman to get help. And, of course, she's the daughter of Batman and Catwoman from Earth 2. And I thought Power Girl was the son, the daughter of Superman.
No, she's still she's basically Supergirl. She's the cousin.
Yeah. The cousin.
But there already was Supergirl here when she came here, so that's why she became Power Girl.
Gotcha. So I like how Pak writes this book where it's like at least the inner monologue boxes are like Batman, Superman kind of talking over each other or thinking over each other.
Yeah, and how a lot of their thoughts are, they start the same, but then they come to different conclusions.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
I got a kick out of, there's a bit where, Batman goes, you know, tisk, tisk. And Superman, you know, just hears it, you know, it's like the slightest sound, you know, Batman's just like always rushing in.
And I know Bruce knows I heard it.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's a nice buddy cop, good cop, bad cop dynamic going on with those
Definitely.
And I even like the stuff with Huntress and Batman. That was kind of nice.
They go off on their secret James Bond mission to check this guy out and get some background information. I like their little, all right, go ahead and slap me, you know,
yeah.
Do it now so they can cause a disturbance and do their thing. The one thing I've talked before that when I notice like a flaw in the artwork, it drives me nuts through the entire book. And it hit me so much in this issue. I just could not focus on anything else. And that is, there are literally no backgrounds in this book. Like if they're in the Batcave, Jay Lee draws like a couple rocks and some bats flying in the top, and that's it. That's the whole Batcave.
And just like a dark, cavernous colors.
Yeah, he leaves it to the colorist to fill in that space. If, like, there's a village at one point the Power Girl crashes into, so he draws, like, two houses on one side and two houses on the other side and a couple palm leaves, and, like, that's it, you know?
Yeah, like when Superman takes Power Girl where thousands of miles away from civilization, it's like a rock.
Yeah, it's just like this one lone chunk of rock out in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, even when they go to this palace for this,
you don't see it.
Yeah, you just see a bunch of people, and then there's like a red banner hanging in the background. And that's how you know that they're inside, is because there's a red banner hanging, you know. Or it's just like as soon as I see it, I can't unsee it. You know, they go into a room where there's a giant computer. So there's a big rectangle for the screen and a bunch of black lines coming out. They're supposed to be the cables, and that's all you see. There's nothing else, you know. It's just, it drives me nuts. And maybe that's the way he keeps up with the schedule of doing a monthly book. I don't know. But, you know, it drives me crazy when I see that.
I don't blame you.
I was actually going to say, I actually enjoyed his art on this one.
I thought it was kinetic. I thought it definitely was moving. I definitely also appreciate wanting something more in the background.
So yeah. I can say, since you've mentioned that now, I'm just thinking about the book, and yeah, there's not one background. He draws people fabulous. You know, it's not the traditional style, but it's quirky enough where it's I can appreciate it.
Like I can see where he draws expressions well.
Right.
He does a pretty good job of doing the panel to panel flow, where, you know, if your eye is supposed to move, you know, from the left to the right, then there's something, a cape is flowing, or an energy crackle, or someone's arm is outstretched, so it draws your eye to that next panel. You know, he does that kind of stuff okay, but just, you know, it's like they're on a rock in the middle of the ocean, so you just have this rock kind of emerging out of nothing. And then the colorist went in and put some blue at the bottom so you knew that was the ocean, and put some yellow at the top so you know that's the sky, you know, and like, right. That's it.
All right.
Click of the week, Tom? Or any last?
I just wanted to do a quick blurb just in case anyone read. I forget what number it is. What's the issue number for Indestructible Hulk this week?
It is 19.
19. What's cool is this is a you know, an Inhumanity kind of crossover, and I just wanted to mention there is I guess one of the antagonists in the book is harkens back to old Kirby and Lee Fantastic Four. I don't know if anyone remembers the Hive and where Adam Warlock basically comes from, and her. You know, there's a bunch of panels and call, you know, that have art that are callbacks, straight callbacks that you could probably find panels of old issues of Fantastic Four, where they lifted a lot of the Kirby designs for the science tech that the Hive used to create Adam Warlock and all this other stuff. It was kind of a cool flashback to those, you know, to those books. You know, you really need to go back and read those, you know, classic Kirby and Lee FF stuff all the way up to issue, you know, like the, you know, like the first 100 issues basically. So, but you know, that was a cool flashback. I just wanted to mention that very quickly. And my last book, and what's competing for Click of the Week for me with Aquaman number 28, because I'm enjoying the comeuppance, is Superior Spider-Man number 28. I am enjoying the comeuppance. I am. I am enjoying the comeuppance of one Otto Octavius. They're still teasing, you know, Slott is still teasing in this book that, you know, whenever Peter Parker does regain control, he's not going to have all his old memories. He's not going to be able to just step right back into his old life.
And that's one thing that actually kind of bothers me, is Peter Parker's going through the mind and, you know, there's only a handful of memories, like key memories that he can recall, but a lot of stuff is missing. And I'm just afraid that the new series is going to start, and this is going to be their excuse to do everything over again. Like, everything that they've ever done, they're like, well, now we can do it again, because he doesn't remember doing it the first time, you know?
Right, or some variant of it. That's right.
It's a brand new day.
Exactly. Oh. It's another brand new day. Right? It's a brand new day.
It's an all-new brand new day.
Yes.
Now. All-new brand new day now.
That's what it is.
just bringing up Superior Spider-Man reminded me that there was a development brought up during the Superior Spider-Man run that I guess you remember the issue where, well, obviously Dirt won't, but maybe Agent 70 will, where there's the issue where Black Cat got arrested because of Spider-Man.
Yes.
I guess, like, supposedly that was going to be an important issue, and I guess the important part was at the end when Peter Parker, that professor, found out that he was stealing Otto Octavius's, whatever, his lecture notes or whatnot.
Right.
I guess that was the important part of the book, but I want to find out what happened to Black Cat. She was all mad and wanting to get revenge.
Who knows? She may have a part to play still. There's still a lot of cards on, you know, there's still a lot of pieces on the board, even though on the cover of this, there aren't very many pieces that are non-Goblin, you know, on the chessboard. But, you know, there's still some key things that still have to fall into place. There were a couple of nice moments in this book. You know, but like I said, the comeuppance is a lot of fun to read for me.
Plus, I want to Black Cat ongoing.
All right. That works. All right. So, are we up to clicks of the week now?
We are.
I can't decide yet.
I've been sitting here trying to decide for the last
week. Yeah. Well, I was about to tell you, I just introduced my alternate click of the week pick would have been. I think my actual click of the week is Aquaman number 28. Believe it or not.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I enjoyed that book. I had a blast reading it. So that is definitely my click of the week. This was, you know, Superior Spider-Man 20, close second.
I think I'm going to go with Batman Superman number 8.
Okay. What is that, two DC books we picked? Holy cow, that's a record. That's a record.
I haven't read Flash yet this week, so I'm going to also have to say Aquaman 28.
Oh, three DC books. Holy cow. Call Dan Didio.
Well,
Didio.
Didio.
Flash, there's two DC books. Since two,
oh, that's right. But three picks.
Now I really got to read this.
That's funny.
I had my iPad.
Yeah, well, and I think part of it may be the fact that the last two issues were okay, but I kind of felt like maybe they were building towards something, and in this issue there is so much going on, but it's so well laid out, mm-hmm. that I kind of
building up his power set.
Well, I kind of want to go back and read
heavy hitter.
Well, I want to read those last two issues to see if maybe I missed something. Because with everything going on in this one, I know some of this stuff was kind of touched on in the last couple issues. So I want to go back and read that. Like, it's so good. It makes me want to go back and read those to see if I missed something that's going on in this book that's leading towards what's happening in the future.
All right. Cool.
So there you go.
There you go. Nice. Look at that. Three DC picks on two books. My goodness. What is the world coming to?
Good stuff.
Mm.
Okay, so that's our clicks of the week. So once again, make sure to go over to declicknation.com to read all the various reviews and previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles. Let's see, Arrow was awesome this week. Just want to mention that.
Okay.
Arrow's back, and I guess maybe next week Agents of the S.H.I.E.L.D. will join in the fun.
That's right.
As Dirt cycles through the covers. So once again, remind everyone that we are live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Come on over and join us and watch live with us. Tweet at us with the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles. And if you use the hashtag throughout the week, maybe you'll have your tweets read on the air.
Yay!
Surprise. So follow us on our Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98. And at the Click Nation, Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat, RoddyKat. And at News Nerds Need. right? Did I get that
there
right?
You go.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something else I was going to add. Can't remember now.
Always what's up, Alyssa Milano?
Yes, yeah, so Alyssa Milano. Hacktivist number two is out. Number two. So next week, some more new stuff from Marvel. I think Matt Nito number one and Moon Knight number one come out.
Ooh, interesting.
Hopefully Marvel will get with it and fits their review site. Probably not.
Yeah, we've got a handful of books coming, but I'm not sure what all's there.
Cool. So with that, we will bid you adieu. This is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Yay!